Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please visit my website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on journalistic fraud, how the New York Times distorts the news, and why it can no longer be trusted, written by Bob Cohn. We'll be back right after this break. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? How much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. Everything the government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in this computer age? Well, you bet we can. You see, information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use, and it's knowing how such information is gathered, what information is stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you have not revealed by your own hand or your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining, informative, educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. Just call the school at area code 417-273-4967 to order yours. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Distorting with polls. Last time we were talking about the New York Times and the tricks that they use to impress upon us what the communists called psychopolitics. We call it brainwashing here in the United States. It's the common vernacular term for making you believe a lie. That's the objective. We select what we want you to believe. And then once we've made the determination as to what you should believe, we set about in a carefully calculated methodology, a modality by which we cause you to believe what it is that we want you to believe. It may be the truth, it may be a lie, it may be a combination of the two. But using polls is one of the methodologies that we follow. And a classic technique developed in the 1990s and now honed to perfection in this new millennium by the New York Times involves the use of opinion polls to influence public opinion. The methodology is straightforward. First, the New York Times employs its massive soft money machine to influence public opinion through a crusade. A crusade is a series of slanted front page, straight news articles, editorials, and opinion editorial pieces. Second, the Times then commissions a public opinion poll on the issues about which it has been advocating. Well, commissions is not exactly the right word. Ignoring the obvious ethical considerations arising from this conflict of interest, for example, reporting on a poll based on questions over which the New York Times has influence. You see, the Times conducts the poll itself. They do it in a joint venture with CBS News, and it's called the New York Times CBS News Poll. And then third, because the Times maintains complete control over the conduct of the poll, it's the Times that chooses the subjects of the poll and determines its timing. The poll is then timed to immediately precede an election or an important congressional vote. And then fourth, because the Times controls which questions to ask and how to ask those questions, the poll questions are written in such a way as to generate a predetermined result, providing the answers that the Times requires to support its editorial views. This kind of survey is often referred to as a push poll. Now, remember these buzzwords. We have words like push poll. That's a lie. Then we have a crusade. That's a lie. We have a term called flooding the zone. That's a lie. And then we use quote someone who agrees with us to promote our lie. Then we create straight news articles, which are in themselves a lie. Then we use distorted interpretation, which is a lie. And then we seek news analysis on such programs as Wall Street Week, Meet the Press, 60 Minutes. And these programs are all aimed at telling you a lie. Let me show you from the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion just what I'm talking about. This is cited from Henry Ford's book called The International Jew on page 216. Remember, this is cited now from the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, first published in 1884 and then republished out of Russia and Paris, France in 1907. It says, "We shall handle the press in the following manner. Number one, we shall saddle the press and keep tight reins upon it. We shall do the same also with other printed matter, for of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we retain or remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? Number two, not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. Number three, literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently our government will become the owner of most of the journals. If we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own," and so on. "This must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless." It's called the 12th Protocols, or Protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion. And that's precisely what we see being done here. Fifth, if the results of the poll satisfactorily support the Times' editorial position, the results are then published on the front page of the Times with a suitable headline. But if the results of the poll are not satisfactory, either the results are not reported at all, or two, the results are distorted into a distorted interpretation of the results, which are then published on the front page with a suitable headline. That also is a lie. And then finally, the New York Times publishes an editorial about the disturbing results of the poll, and its op-ed columnists are then invited to pile on with their erudite analysis, the egg throwing. The cycle soon repeats itself with another front page crusade, another editorial campaign, another push poll, and then we come up with more erudite editorial reviews by these experts, you know, experts that come on such news shows as Wall Street Week or Meet the Press or 60 Minutes or some other news analysis program with experts and government or industry leaders who will come out and tell you a story. And their story may or may not be true, but it doesn't make any difference, because when it's published in the paper or when it's reported on by Dan Rather, it's then twisted to make it say what we want you to believe. Finally, the Times publishes an editorial about the disturbing results of the poll. And all of this, the Times knows, reverberates through the sound chamber of the liberal media with newspapers who subscribe to the New York Times news service and television news outlets, especially CBS, repeating these poll results. Ultimately, liberal columnists and television commentators use the results or the Times' distorted interpretation of these results to support their left-wing diatribes. Now, the result is either public opinion bent toward the Times' point of view or the appearance of a like-minded public opinion. That is, opinion distorted to reflect what the Times thinks the people should believe. So let's take a look at some examples of how this is done. When we seek to distort the polls, we do it like this. It was a month before the 2000 presidential election, and the New York Times was in full gear, marshaling all of its resources to get Al Gore elected. The lengths to which the Times campaigned for Al Gore in the 2000 election is legendary, and the skillful interpretation of polls played no small part in that campaign. Front page, objective news articles, editorials, and op-ed pieces were being written with a determination to boost Gore's election prospects and to belittle George W. Bush as someone not ready for the presidency. Then a month before the election, the Times was finally ready to take a poll. Well, in the poll that focused on the candidate's experience and readiness to hold the nation's highest office, George Bush performed surprisingly well in all of the answers to questions that would be expected to play to Al Gore's strengths. Now, since Al Gore had been a congressman and senator for 16 years and vice president of the United States for another 8 years, it was not surprising that 71% of the public believed Gore has prepared himself well enough for the job of president. And 68% said Gore had the skills needed to negotiate effectively with world leaders, questions that were predetermined to significantly favor Gore over Bush. Now, the Times, however, must have been stunned to learn that about 50% of the public also believed that George W. Bush, referred to as the village idiot from Texas, was both prepared to be president and had the skills needed to negotiate effectively with world leaders. Moreover, an impressive 67% said that Bush had the ability to be an effective president. And on the question of leadership, Bush actually beat Gore. 67% of registered voters said that Bush had strong qualities of leadership, while 61% said that Gore did. 40% of Gore supporters, according to the poll, believed that Bush would make an effective leader. So now let's return to how the results were reported by the New York Times. In a front page news article under the headline, quote, "Candidates given high marks in poll on fitness to lead, October 3rd, 2000. The Times provided this interpretation of the results of the latest New York Times CBS news poll. Their opinion was as follows, quote, "Taken as a whole, the survey had much encouraging news for Mr. Gore and very little for Mr. Bush." Now, isn't that exactly the opposite to what the public had reported? Even in this biased poll, they got a bad result. So to understand how the Times could reach such a conclusion from its own data, you must consider why the poll was conducted in the first place. The poll and the accompanying article was a vehicle for the Times to accomplish two things. One, to use the power of its front page to transmit its own doubts about Bush's qualifications to be president, and two, to succinctly frame the issue to be addressed in the first debate between the candidates. Namely, isn't George W. Bush too dumb to be the leader of the free world? The lead sentence of the article does a pretty good job of driving home this first objective. Well, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, did you know that Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history? Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, that according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. A study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York and its agencies, operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. Every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, all of this information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for anyway? Well, you know, knowing how this information is gathered, what information is stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private, it actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy if you just knew how. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and all you have to do to order yours is call direct, 417-273-4967 to order yours. If you're online, go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, this book, titled Journalistic Fraud, How the New York Times Distorts the News and Why It Can No Longer Be Trusted, is written by Bob Cohn. Bob Cohn is an attorney. He was a former reporter with the New York Times, an insider who can give us the information that we need to have to reveal to us what we have already heard and suspected, and that is that the news media is biased. Biased. It's not biased just against Republicans or just for Democrats or vice versa. It's biased against us for big government, the New World Order, and the United Nations. There's an agenda. And you and I are a couple of pawns on the chessboard being sacrificed from time to time. And it's you and I who give our votes, and our votes of confidence, to our public leaders. If you'd like to know how this is being done and how it's being used against you, it's published by WNDBooks.com. It's simple enough, www.WNDBooks.com. They're in Nashville, Tennessee. Journalistic Fraud is the name of the book. I rate it a 1 in 20 read. Bob Cohn is the author. And you can get a copy for about $27.95 at Barnes & Noble. That's where we got it, Barnes & Noble, or from other good bookstores. Now, we're talking about the use of polls to deceive, the use of polls to make you believe a lie. They're called push polls, crusades, flooding the zone, quote somebody who agrees with us, straight news articles, distorted interpretation, and news analysis. These are also referred to as spin on objective news articles. They're all methodologies of lying to us and making us believe it. Now, in Boston, October the 2nd, on the eve of the first presidential debate here, most Americans say Governor George W. Bush and Vice President Al Gore are strong leaders, but they consider Mr. Gore far more prepared for the White House and better qualified to deal with world leaders and members of both parties in Congress, the latest New York Times CBS News poll shows, unquote. Now, that's a lie. That's a lie. The poll actually showed that Bush was better qualified than Gore. Remember? Now, the second objective was driven home later in the article when the Times sent the following message to journalists and television news anchors so that there may be no misunderstanding as to why people would be tuning in to watch the debate. The Times reported, quote, "A majority of Americans say they will tune in to the debate. In addition to seeing where the two candidates stand on the issues, the poll's respondents say they will be looking to determine whether the nominees seem ready to handle the responsibilities of being president," unquote. Now, that's what the New York Times published and said this is what the people who answered the polls were saying. That's a lie. They weren't saying that at all. They said the exact opposite. Imagine how Gore might have fared if the public had been asked if Gore had conducted himself ethically enough in public office to have the character and personal integrity to be president. You see, had the poll focused on the issue of character and personal integrity, asking questions about the candidate's past political fundraising activities or how they reacted to President Clinton's moral behavior in the Oval Office, the results would have reflected a bias in favor of Bush, and the Times could have instead signaled to the media a Bush-favored debate question. Do we want the moral legacy of the Clintons to maintain control of the White House? But you see, the agenda of the Times was to elect Gore, not Bush, and so the Times, as we know, has become particularly adept at fearlessly hammering home its editorial views in the form of objective news. So while it's bandied about as being objective news, in reality, it's pure propaganda with the intent of making you believe a lie. Now, the Times went on to say, a survey found that as voters start to form detailed impressions of the candidates, even those who say they intend to back Mr. Bush express reservations about his preparedness. Now, later, the article included the following curious statement. The Times admitted, quote, "The lingering questions about Mr. Bush's preparedness do not seem to have affected his overall standing in the head-to-head competition as reflected in the poll." That's a lie. You see, the poll showed by 6 percentage points that Bush was ahead of Gore. Remember? On that very topic. That is preparedness to lead the nation. However, if concerns about Bush's preparedness did not affect his standing in the polls, then perhaps Bush's favorable standing in the polls arises from something else. From this data, that a candidate's preparedness to be president will not affect the voter's vote, you might reasonably conclude that the public is basing their vote upon the character of the candidates and their positions on the issues and not upon the preparedness of the candidates to assume the office. Now, since the Times obviously believes that half the public could not possibly agree with Bush, and since it would only hurt Gore to speculate on the character issue, questions about Bush's preparedness, as long as the Times has something to say about it, would continue to linger. So the Times continued its assault, and here's what they went on to say, quote, "The most striking finding in the survey is the extent to which voters have reservations about Mr. Bush's preparedness." You see, that's a lie. That is not what the poll revealed at all. The poll revealed that the people that they had polled, registered voters, had ranked Mr. Bush equal to, in fact, 6 percentage points better than Gore in preparedness and leadership. Now, the Times ignored the morality issue altogether. and most striking, while disparaging Bush's preparedness seemed to be the very purpose of the survey, the findings did not support that conclusion at all. In the next sentence, the Times almost comes clean and tells the truth about the bias that's incorporated in the poll when the Times said, quote, "Their concerns may reflect their knowledge that Mr. Gore has served as vice president for 8 years, before that was in the White House and then the Senate for 16 years. By contrast, Mr. Bush did not hold public office until he was elected governor of Texas in 1994. Unquote. Now, for the Times, the lingering questions of Bush's readiness to be president continued through his inauguration and only ended on September 11th, at least temporarily. The Times' use of the poll data to boost Al Gore's 2000 presidential election campaign when it needed boosting and then to defend it when it needed defending was not limited to the Times' interpretations of the New York Times CBS News polls. For example, in an article that ran under the headline, "Despite Ups and Downs, Survey Shows Races Tied," September 28, 2000. So the Times put the following spin on a Los Angeles Times poll that put presidential candidate George Bush at a 48% to 42% lead over Al Gore. Notice the word spin. What is spin? It's a lie. Pure and simple, it's a lie. We intend to interpret these facts, these answers that we receive from the people who answer our poll in such a way as to show you that the poll doesn't say what these people seem to say it says. That's dishonest. It's a lie. And then when the Times backs a candidate like Al Gore, that's fine. Why would we care if the Times wants to back a particular candidate? But don't you think that if they're going to back a candidate, that they ought to be honest about it and say, you know, we're in favor of Al Gore, and we don't want you to vote for George Bush because we think that he's a bad guy. We don't think he's prepared to be president. That's not the modality or the methodology being applied here. The Times takes the position that we're neutral and we're just reporting the news, and so we've got this straight news article. We've got this poll, and we're reporting to you what Americans are thinking right now. See if what other Americans are thinking compares to what you're thinking. See, that's the position that they're espousing. But it's the exact opposite. What they're in effect attempting to do is to change your mind. And it works. It works. This is called brainwashing or psychopolitics. It's the methodology that we employ to make you believe a lie. And it works. Now, my point is, and I think that you ought to know what's being done to you and why it works, and then you can decide for yourself whether you want to continue that process or not. If you read it in the newspaper, it may be true, it may be false, or it may be a combination of truth and error. In any event, whatever it is that you read in the New York Times or any newspaper that subscribes to the New York Times wire service is 2 times out of 3 likely to be filled with error, and 1 time out of 3 is likely to be the truth. Now, how do you like that? But it's being espoused as being the gospel. It's the truth. You can rely on us because we are the newspaper of record. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour and the Editorial Review. It's sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? How much does government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, your government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, and everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. And that's because information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. And it's knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored, what information you want to keep personal and private, that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, just call and ask for my free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining, informative, educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. All you have to do is call the school direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, this georgegordon.org, or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. We're reviewing a book called Journalistic Fraud, written by Bob Cohn. Bob Cohn is an attorney, so he knows how to write, knows the legal ins and outs, knows what objections are, what truth and falsity is. But he's also a reporter, and he was a reporter for the New York Times. He's an insider and can tell us what goes on inside the New York Times and why it is that it's dishonest. It's a dynamite read. $27.95 is the price. I'm recommending it, not because I get a stipend or a commission or anything from it, but because it's information that you need to know. Information that's hidden from the general public. Unless an insider were to reveal to us what's going on at the New York Times, how would we ever find out? Bob Cohn, Journalistic Fraud. You can get a copy at your local bookstore. Ours is Barnes & Noble. Or you can go to the webpage, wndbooks.com. It's an easy one, www.wndbooks.com. Nashville, Tennessee is where they're located. All right, we're talking about dishonest polls. Well, after watching his opponent's popularity rise in the polls over the last month, Governor George W. Bush got a dose of good news over the last few days, though momentum is now his, with three new nationwide polls showing that he has regained some of the ground that he lost to Vice President Al Gore. Mr. Bush seems to have the edge in at least two of the polls, but is it real? The basic fact is no one is ahead when the polls are looked at together. The presidential race is so close that it is impossible to give either candidate an edge. Mr. Bush got his most encouraging news from the Los Angeles Times, which reported yesterday that thanks to a 22-point advantage among men, Mr. Bush is now leading Mr. Gore 48% to 42%, but since the margin of sampling error is plus or minus 4 percentage points, the findings have to be considered a statistical tie. Now, that was a report in the New York Times. You know, for example, if an article that ran under the headline, "Despite Ups and Downs, Survey Shows Race is Tied," the Times put the following spin on the Los Angeles Times poll that our presidential candidate, George Bush, at 48% to 42%, had a lead over Al Gore. Now, the New York Times published these facts, these three polls, and they said, no, it's a statistical tie. That's to make you believe that it's a tie, that Bush does not have a 6 percentage point lead. And that's because there's a plus or minus error ratio of 4%. Well, wouldn't that make Bush lead by 2% then? I mean, even if you took the 4% away from him, and if there's a 4% error ratio in there, it could be that Bush has got a 6% lead or a 2% lead. We don't know which. But it's not a tie, is it? If I lead you by 2%, that's not a tie. A tie is 50-50, isn't it? Thus, the Times dismissed Bush's 6% lead as a statistical tie. Well, consider the likelihood of the Times applying the same logic to dismiss a 6% lead by a Democrat over a Republican. Now, a few months after Bush took office, the Times and CBS conducted another poll, and the results were predictable. On a front-page story under the headline, 60% in poll favor Bush, but economy is major concern, March 14, 2001. The Times continued its theme on Bush's preparedness. George W. Bush has drawn encouraging reviews for his presidential debut, but Americans are increasingly nervous about the economy and express concerns about Mr. Bush's ability to steer the nation to sustained prosperity, the latest New York Times CBS news poll shows, unquote. That's a lie. You see, it says George W. Bush has drawn encouraging reviews for his presidential debut. That's true. But Americans are increasingly nervous about the economy and express concern about Mr. Bush's ability to steer the nation to sustained prosperity. That's a lie. And the latest New York Times CBS poll shows. That's a lie. That poll does not show that. That's what the Times is reporting that the poll shows, but the poll does not show that. It shows that 60% of the people have confidence in Mr. Bush. 40% don't. Not the other way around. Now, again, if you were reporting this from a biased point of view, I'm a partisan. You know, it's like being a Southern partisan. I'm a Southern partisan. I'm anti-Yankee. I am pro-Confederate. But if I come to you and I say, I'm neutral in this, and I'm just reporting the facts between the Confederates and the Yankees, and then I use this kind of push-pull, crusade, flooding the zone, quoting someone who agrees with us, using straight news articles, distorted interpretation, and news analysis, that's a lie. I am a partisan. And it's like going into court and the judge appears to be neutral. He's not. He's a partisan. He works for the government. He works for the party who is complaining about your behavior. You know, this complaint about you is styled the State of New York versus Harry Finkelstone. Harry Finkelstone is the object of the state's suit. And so the state brings you into the state's court before the state's judge to be prosecuted by the state's prosecutor, to be testified against by the state's employees, and then defended by the state's licensed attorney. And this is called a fair trial. People believe it. And they call this a fair trial. You went to public school, you believe that. It's nonsense. What would you think if I brought you into the Gordon Court of Justice and I complained about you, and I brought you into my court here in my law school in Isabella, Missouri, to be tried in front of my judge, my wife, and to be prosecuted by my son, the prosecutor, and to be testified against by my daughter, and then to be defended by my other son? Would you call that a fair trial? Well, that's the kind of bias that's being expressed secretly behind the scenes by the news media. Now, different news organizations apply this to different candidates. In this case, we're applying it to presidential candidates, and the New York Times is favoring Gore over Bush. All in all, when we take a look at the New World Order, who controls the newspapers? When we take a look at the United Nations, who controls the newspapers and public opinion concerning the United Nations? The war in Iraq, the war in Bosnia, the war on terror. Paper money versus gold, or any of the major issues, abortion and non-abortion and so on. You'll find that the news media is uniformly united for the New World Order free trade, the war on terror. And then they appear to be of the most opposite views. Remember the protocol? The Protocols of Zion. It says, literature and journalism are the two most important educational forces, and consequently our government, the New World Order, will become the owner of most of the journals. And if we permit 10 private journals like George Gordon or Truth Radio, we shall organize 30 of our own like the New York Times and the Washington Post and so on. But we must not let the public suspect that that's what we're doing, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, that's the general public, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless. This isn't done accidentally. It's being done on purpose. And you might as well know and understand it. And you remember, you've got these five strings that are attached to you: vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. If you can't control your vanity, your lust, your greed, your jealousy, and your fear, you can rest assured somebody else will jerk your strings and control you. That's what the bottom line all of this is all about, after all. So the New York Times dismisses Bush's 6% lead as a statistical tie. And then the Times continued its theme on Bush's preparedness. 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 Bush is not prepared to be president. It's preparedness. But the public didn't think preparedness was the issue. They thought morals was the issue. But the Times never asked any questions about morals. That wouldn't favor Al Gore. Now, that may have been the lead on the front page, but it should not be surprising that none of the poll questions listed in the Times addressed whether Bush had the ability to steer the nation to sustained prosperity or to any kind of prosperity. Several questions concerned Bush's tax cut proposal, which 57% of the public supported. 43% said his tax cut would be good for the economy. 56% agreed the tax cut is necessary to keep Congress from spending the surplus. And absolutely nothing appears in the questions or the answers that would suggest any concern whatsoever about Bush's abilities on economic issues. The other results in the survey all supported Bush's views on the issues. 65% of the respondents agreed that it was a good deal for the federal government to give money to religious organizations to provide social services. 49% agreed that parents should get tax-funded vouchers that they can use to pay tuition for private or religious schools. End of survey. And yet in the second and third paragraphs of the article, here's what the Times did. The Times said, quote, after the most contentious election in the nation's history, many Americans have rallied behind their new president. His job approval rating is 60%, which is similar to that of his father, George Bush, and Bill Clinton in the opening months of their presidencies. But even so, Mr. Bush is burdened by a perception that he is not fully in command. Half of the public says that Mr. Bush is not really in charge of what's going on in his own administration. Unquote. All right, so Bush's popularity is at 60%, and the Times wants to bring a negative context to your mind. They want you to think negatively of George Bush. Why is that? We want to bring your approval of Mr. Bush and his policies down. We don't want 60%. We want to bring it down to 50% or 45% or 40%. Now, here's the actual question upon which the conclusion of that last paragraph was based. Now, here's what the Times asked. Quote, do you think George W. Bush is in charge of what goes on in his administration most of the time? Or do you think other people are really running the government most of the time? Answer, Bush, 42%, others, 50%. 8% didn't know. Well, now, given this question, it is surprising that as many as 42% of the respondents answered that Bush, not other people, is really running the government most of the time. You see, the question itself is a distorted simplification of how well an executive assembles a quality staff and how effective he delegates his vast responsibilities. The U.S. government has millions of employees, and to suggest that any president any president and not other people is really running the government most of the time is ridiculous. The survey results could well have been an indication of how well the public thinks of Bush's cabinet appointees. So well that they are really running the government, leaving the president with time to focus on the strategic issues that he should be focusing on, and that is policy. Nevertheless, the Times chose to interpret the results to declare in a front page straight news article that President Bush is not fully in command. That's the headline. Quote, not fully in command. And he is, quote, not really in charge of what's going on in his own administration, unquote. So the April 29th, 2001 CBS News announced the results of the latest New York Times CBS News poll on its CBSNews.com website, reporting that President Bush's approval rating stood at 56%. CBS described the results of the poll this way. Poll, we like him. CBS, as he approaches the end of his first 100 days in office, President George W. Bush generally receives positive reviews, and the public sees him much the same as it did when he first took the presidential oath in January, a new CBS poll reports. Well, that's not what the Times is reporting on the front page, is it? You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property? Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks? Attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance. Well, you know there's a lot you can do. And the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. Remember, that's free general law CD package. And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can order yours by simply calling direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me a request on the email for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about journalistic fraud published by WNDBooks.com. Bob Cohn is the author. Cohn is a former writer, a reporter with the New York Times, a whistleblower now, telling us what's going on and what's wrong with the New York Times. Why it is that if you ever could rely upon their reporting as being objective, you certainly can no longer do so. And probably your newspaper, like our newspaper here in Springfield, Missouri, relies upon the wire services, and one of the wire services is the New York Times. We get the same slanted, biased news reporting out of our newspaper here in Springfield that you get out of your newspaper wherever you live. It's not an accident. Now let me show you another example here. Survey shows doubts stirring on terror war. Americans for the first time are raising doubts about whether the nation can accomplish its objectives in fighting terrorism at home and abroad, including capturing or killing Osama bin Laden, saving the international alliance from unraveling, and protecting people from future attacks, the latest New York Times CBS News poll shows. Now remember, that poll was taken before the war. Now, what did the survey actually find? Well, here are the actual poll questions. Listen to the questions. Do you approve of the military attacks led by the United States against Afghanistan? Approve 88%, disapprove 8%. Second question, would the war in Afghanistan be worth the cost of several thousand American lives? And the answer is yes, 61%, no, 27%. In addition, 88% of those polled said they had a fair amount or a great deal of confidence in the ability of the United States government to protect its citizens from future terrorist attacks. This result was very striking, particularly when you consider the circumstances during the time in which the poll was conducted. Some postal workers had lost their lives by inhaling anthrax-laced powder. The anthrax was discovered in letters sent to government leaders and prominent television news journalists, Tom Brokaw, for instance. Now, at the time the poll was taken, it was still unclear as to whether Al-Qaeda operatives or some domestic psychopath had caused the anthrax scare. Without further evidence, the Bush administration prudently refused to jump to any conclusions, particularly avoiding making any statement that might have caused widespread panic. Nevertheless, the chilling uncertainty gave the Times an opportunity to bottom fish for a headline, and it came up with the following question. Is the government telling people everything they need to know about the anthrax attacks? Yes, 47%. No, 50%. All right. If 50% of the public believed the government wasn't telling them everything they need to know about the anthrax attacks, then the Times apparently thought there must be some anxiety or doubt stirring out there. And what caused those doubts to stir? The anthrax attacks? Well, that would be too simple. And that would mean passing up a chance to bash the Bush administration, as the Times managed to do here. And here's the way they did it. The Times put this piece in the article. It says, quote, there were signs of anxiety in the poll, perhaps because it was conducted at a time when developments have made people feel more vulnerable. In recent days, the Bush administration and leaders on Capitol Hill appeared to lack a coordinated message in responding to the anthrax threat. Unquote. Well, now, this might seem to be a pretty thin basis for a headline that declares doubts stirring on terror war. Wait a minute. Terror war. The subject matter that everybody was thinking about was Afghanistan. The Times turns this around to, wow, we're really concerned because 50% of the public doesn't think that Bush and the Bush administration's leveling with us on anthrax. It's like comparing oranges and lemons, isn't it? And then we turn around and say, you see, these lemons over here are being espoused by the Bush administration to be oranges. So they turn the lie into the truth, or try to make you believe it's the truth, and then they take the truth and twist it into a lie and try to make you believe that lie, and without ever delineating between the two. It's a subtle methodology of brainwashing, wouldn't you agree? You know, this might seem to be a pretty thin basis for a headline declaring doubt stirring on terror war, but when a Republican president is maintaining a solid 87% approval rating, you have to be resourceful and take what shots you can. Perhaps the only one stirring doubt about the war effort was the New York Times. but you don't win Pulitzer Prizes, boys and girls, by idly standing by when a Republican president enjoys unprecedented success, especially high poll numbers. So after several months of publishing the results of slanted polls and distorted interpretations of them on their front pages, the Times finally started to attract some significant media attention from unwelcome corners. It began when the Times decided to take a fresh New York Times CBS News poll on the public's impressions of potential military action against Iraq. Well, the timing of the poll was no accident. It came after an unrelenting 10-month crusade described in the previous chapter, waged by the New York Times in both its news and its opinion pages to oppose the use of force against Iraq. The poll also preceded by just a few days an important congressional vote on a resolution permitting President Bush to use force against Iraq. And it was also less than 30 days prior to the 2002 midterm elections. So once again, the Times devoted the lead position on its front page, a place reserved for the most important objectives or objective news of the day, to report its own interpretation of the results of survey questions that it had a hand in crafting. And they did it under the headline, Public Says Bush Needs to Pay Heed to Weak Economy, October 7th, 2002. That was reported in the Times. Well, a majority of Americans say that the nation's economy is in its worst shape in nearly a decade and that President Bush and congressional leaders are spending too much time talking about Iraq while neglecting problems at home, according to the New York Times CBS News poll. So that was their conclusion, that Bush is spending too much time on Iraq and not enough on the national economy. Well, the Times article was openly criticized for two basic reasons. First of all, the Times interpretation of the results was distorted. And two, the questions were slanted to begin with. So on the day the article appeared, veteran reporter Britt Hume on his Fox News program Special Report suggested that in its interpretation of the polls and the results, the Times actually concocted results to questions that were never asked. Commenting directly on the lead sentence above, Hume said, as reported in the mediaresearch.org, in fact, the poll shows no such thing. It does not show that people, by a 56 to 43% margin, think the economy is bad. And it does not show that 70% of those asked would like to hear political candidates talk more about the economy. But the poll never asks whether the president is talking too much about Iraq. The poll found a majority, 52%, think that the president is spending his time, quote, about right, with only 41% saying he's too focused on foreign policy. And those numbers, by the way, are not reported in the New York Times. So what you'd thought about polls being rigged is true. And if you thought the polls were true, accurate, and correct, well, wasn't that chapter a surprise? All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're reviewing a book called Journalistic Fraud and How the New York Times Distorts the News and Why It Can No Longer Be Trusted. You can get a copy of the book from Barnes & Noble, $27.95, or you can go to the website. It's wndbooks.com. wndbooks.com. Well, we're just about out of time. Remember that The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. If the signal says our time is up, we'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you right back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.